Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Rowan Dredge, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today, mate?
Doing really well, Jesse. Thanks so much for having me. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
Oh, mate, the pleasure is all mine. And look, we've had a few little misfires getting this done, mainly because I had a family thing to attend to. So firstly, thank you so much for being so gracious in that moment, which allowed me to attend to the family things. But today is really all about understanding and unpacking leadership. And you've got a lot of street cred in that world, and particularly when it comes to helping technical people become, you know, great leaders. And before we get into the what and the how of all of that sort of stuff, I wanted to understand for a moment, you know, how did you find yourself in that line of work, and why do you think that there's such a need for technical experts to hone their leadership skills?
Well, I think that sort of thing is actually about how do we evaluate what great leadership is. And historically, I've had these conversations with clients, Jesse, in the last 12 months, where she's a senior manager aspiring to be a C-level leader. And she said to me, why won't the quality of my work just let everybody know that I'm good? And it was at that point that I was able to reiterate to her that at the point at which you want to move from being great at your job to being outstanding at leadership, it isn't just about being good at your job. It's not just about running a good practice or a good business. It's actually a whole nother skill set on top of that. And I've honed that over 25 years in starting life as a high school teacher. And then, so if you can get a teenager to listen to you, you're probably on track.
Doing very well.
And then, that's right, with a dad with kids your age too. So then into the not-for-profit space, community development work, and for the last 13 years in running my own corporate practice. And I see the same challenge all the way along, Jesse, and it's people saying, my work should be good enough. And the answer is, your work is only good enough to an extent. There's another skill set and another world to lean into called the leadership world and developing people.
So I think that's a really interesting thing, because that happens with dentists as well. You know, surely my work is good enough. That translates into lots of different areas of dentistry. If I'm a good dentist, surely the patients will know, therefore they'll send their family and friends and all that sort of stuff. But equally from the team perspective, lots of people listening to this particular podcast, there'll be some who are very keen to remain technical experts in their field and be hands-on dentists, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's also a subset of people listening to this podcast who go, Rowan, I'm quite happy being a dentist. I've enjoyed it, but I also know that there's another level that I want to get to. And I know that for me to be able to do that, I've got to be able to build a team. I know I've got to be able to delegate things. I know I've got to, you know, get some leverage into my practice, but it's hard. I don't quite know how. I've never been trained for this, all those sorts of things. So I guess coming to your point, which is understanding what good leadership is, for the people listening to this podcast, whether they want to remain a technical expert or whether they want to transcend to being a business leader, what really does leadership mean to you? What does good leadership look like?
This is it's in part circumstantial. And I think your prefacing the question is perfect in the sense that what do you actually want? Mm. And I think that's a really important question for everyone that's listening to this conversation now. What do you want? Because if you want to be an incredible dentist running a brilliant practice with X number of people working with you, then at some point that will tap out to the ability of your available resources, your ability to lead people, your ability to run and manage a practice, your ability to keep, to find and retain great staff. And so the first question I ask people is, what do you want? What's got in the way of getting that historically? And what's your appetite for moving forward? So there's always a conversation that's looking for the sense of drive. Jim Rohn talks about emotions that change you. And he said, sometimes regret is an emotion that changes you, or disgust is an emotion that changes you. You're standing in front of the mirror looking at what it's showing you, and you're 4 months away from summer thinking, no, I've just got to get on with the job. Like, this is not pretty, right? So there are things that change us. So the very first thing I say is, what do you want?
Yeah.
And the second thing, what gets in the way and how do we get there? The people that say, I actually want to become a leader of leaders, is a totally different level of conversation, as I mentioned earlier. And we go, right, how much do you know already about taking the step to other people, right? Not just to you, but through you, my friend Matt Church says. How much do you know about helping other people develop to be better known than you are in your practice right now?
Wow, I think that's a really important conversation. And just before we do get into the nitty-gritty of that conversation, there's lots of threads I'd like to pull on that little thing already and unravel and see where we go. So hold on, ladies and gents, this is totally unscripted. The question that really comes up, and I know that there'll be someone listening to this particular podcast who'll have the objection going on in their mind, and I want to name the elephant in the room up front, because I'm sure you've heard this or variations of this lots of times. There'll be some people that say, I want to develop leaders of leaders. I want to have a business that's scaled, it's leveraged, it gives me the time, freedom, and flexibility, but I'm really nervous about letting other people shine more than me in case they leave, or in case I set up a competitor, or in case of this, or in case of that. Now, I have a view that of abundance, and I believe that letting people move on to their own adventures is a good thing and something to feel proud about and all that sort of stuff. But there'll be someone listening to this podcast today who might be having that thought, and I just don't want to let the conversation move on until we just address that particular thought.
Yeah, and it's a reasonable thought. I've got two ways of approaching this. Realistically, what I would be inviting this person to understand is, what are the aspirations of your team? What do they want? In the same way that someone would ask you what you want, what is it that they want? Secondly, I can't even name who said this, but there's a question that says, do you train your people to retain them and grow them and worry about the fact that they might leave? Or do you not train your people and worry about the fact that they might stay?
Gold. That is absolute gold. I love that. So, ladies and gents, just rewind for the last 10 seconds. Play that little clip over and over and over and over and over, and I think you'll have a really good answer. So, thank you, mate, for addressing that. And whoever might be having that thought as you're driving, I want you to understand that having that thought doesn't mean that there's a scarcity or anything like that. It's a fair thought, and I think everyone would have had that thought at some point. It's a common question that comes up in all the work that we do, and obviously I think it comes up in the work that you do. So let's unpack the how part a little bit, mate, because again, yeah, we spoke about having a plan, what do you want, and you've got a lot of thoughts around making sure you've got clarity and conviction and some energy around that. So what are the steps that people might want to think about as they go forward in this direction? What needs to happen next?
It's a really important way of thinking this through. And I think in shapes, Jesse. So if the people that are listening to this conversation at the moment, I want you to imagine a triangle. And again, these things are useful until they're not. But if you're thinking about a triangle right now, the bottom baseline of the triangle is your first job as a leader is to realize potential. Mm. And if I unpack that briefly, that is to be able to become the best version of yourself that you can, but also remember that you've been given the responsibility of other people realizing their potential. One of the phrases that my wife and I use with our two young children is, we aren't raising children, we're raising adults that are currently children. Mm. And so we think that through with the lens. And so right now, as of the moment of this conversation, we're right in the middle of a finance conversation, because my 7-year-old son is, how do I get more money? And you would love this as a dentist. His current plan is, I lose my baby teeth and the tooth fairy is unusually generous. And so that's his plan. But we're actually building something into them that they will use in the future. So the bottom of the triangle is realized potential. The left-hand side of the triangle, as it goes up to the top, is activate others. And this is the key to thinking about how to scale and build and include other people in your practice. It's looking at what people, the way I say it, is what would you do for free? What bubbles up inside you that you are so passionate about that you are wired to do that you cannot wait? Or is it just a job? If it's just a job and you rock in a few minutes late, you take your full hour for lunch, you go home a few minutes early, that's the worldview and the responsibility of the individual. But if it's somebody that you've tapped into a passion, you can switch that on for somebody really, really quick. The third part is, and if you imagine the other side of the triangle, is to shape a preferred future. So that your job as a practice owner, your job as a raiser up of a team, your job as a realizer of vision and potential is to realize potential, yours and others, activate others, get people doing things they're passionate about, and then shape a preferred future and say, this is, I'd love to be able to have multiple practices. I'd love to be able to have the time, the finance, the flexibility that I'm looking for. And the place that you start, again, this is why the shape's important. So I'd be saying, if you're driving and listening to this, if you're walking and listening to this, what have you got to do differently on the bottom part of the triangle? Who can you have a purposeful conversation with about, hey, is there anything more that you could be inspired by? What's the currency that you love to be recognized with? And then be inviting people in to be creating the future, not just doing a job.
Yeah, I love that. And I just want to talk about this just for a moment as well, Rowan, because you spoke about in the realized potential piece at the bottom of the triangle that yours and others. Can I just start with your own potential first? Because I know you mentioned earlier in the podcast that, and I'm going to paraphrase this because this is the language I use and I don't want to misquote you by trying to quote you back. So I'll just paraphrase. Essentially, what I heard you say is that the business growth won't outstrip the growth of the leader. So at some point, we need to be able to grow ourselves. Is that, am I paraphrasing you correctly? Because that's language I'd use.
That couldn't be truer. Nothing will grow beyond the capability of you and I as leaders and everybody that's tuning into this conversation.
Yeah. So I really, really resonate with that. So if you were trying to ask yourself some better questions, and if you were trying to say, okay, how do I realize my own potential? What are the self sort of questions or the self-reflection activities that one might go through to start asking themselves meaningful questions so they can start to firstly understand their own potential? And because some people might not realize they've got a potential, right? How do you know where your potential begins and ends? And then I guess an extension of that is once you've realized you've got this potential, how do you then fulfill it and tap into it?
Yeah. And the follow-on of that is asking ourselves a somewhat philosophical question, but it is, why do we do personal growth? Why do we do professional growth? To what end? Is it just so that I can be the best version of myself and like the picture that I put up on my social media? Or is it so that there is actually something that I leave behind? And I believe that people have an innate sense of legacy. So if I started at the most at an esoteric level, we actually all want our lives to count for something. And then if I brought it all the way back to the most base and the most fundamental, I'm unconvinced to date that we know how to call people up to what is possible in their life and in their world and in their potential and in their practice and in their leadership. And I'm convinced, and if I had a crusade, it would be, I'd love to see the leadership game changed to the extent where we're looking at people with integrity, with honesty, with love, and we're calling them up to what's possible. So with those two bookends in mind, the first thing I do is I would encourage everybody listening to this conversation to go on whatever process they need to go on to know themselves, to understand themselves. So any kind of assessment or profiling or strengths discovery. And then I would call that at the personal level. The second is that you would want to interact with some trusted relationships around that, because you want them to be able to affirm what you're good at, but also help you see what you can't see. And I think growth is at 2 points. Growth is at the leverage point of our superpowers. And it's also when we discover what it is that we couldn't previously see. I'm bringing an experience to Asia Pacific called the Five Voices Experience. They're based at the moment out of Europe and the US. And this talks about leadership in what they call voice and voice order as a metaphor. And it gives you the quietest voices, the nurturer, then the creative, then the guardian, then the connector, and then the pioneer. And it gives you definitions of those. But when you know what they are, when you know what the characteristics of them are, but also when you know what the pitfalls are, Jesse, then you can start to put some plans in place to grow in each of these areas. I'm from a family of five. I'm the middle child of five kids. I grew up essentially vying for attention. And so not only I'm the middle child of five kids, I'm an 8-2 extrovert on the scale. And so I was a show-off disaster waiting to happen, right? And I'm, you know, some people may think that hasn't changed, but it's the key that changes the things that could trip you up are self-awareness. And very intentional steps towards learning new things. What I did in my early 20s to finish that narrative is I said, right, this year I'm going to learn to be an active listener. I finished the year and someone said to me, what are you going to do next year? I said, I'm going to learn to be an active listener.
And the response was?
Yes, they were encouraging that I had made some progress, but I needed to make more. The key behind that is make it manageable. Make it something that you can do. Do you need to reflectively listen? Do you need to clarify more effectively? You'd be surprised at how far we can come or how far we can develop when we bring it down into something small and doable. And obviously, the pin-up for that at the moment is James Clear and his book, Atomic Habits, and the system that we can introduce. So, I've got that philosophical end, you know, we all want our lives to count for something, and then that base end. And I'd say by way of introduction, self-awareness and small steps of transformation with a group of people that will give you accountability and affirmation.
Yeah.
Yes, you're making it. Yes, you've got a little bit more work to do.
And again, it's about choosing that peer group and making sure that you're with those trusted people, which again, I really, really resonate with. And I'm very fortunate in my life to have some people who I can count on for that kind of feedback, as I'm sure you've got someone in your circle of trusted confidants in that space as well. I wanted to come back to a word which you use is probably one of my favorite words, intentionality or specific intent. And the reason I want to come back to that word is because oftentimes I see people going through life, great people doing the best they can, but sometimes there's some intention missing. I wondered if you have a view. I know this is a little bit of a tangent for a moment, but I wondered if you have a view around the power of intention.
So just to clarify, when you say intention, as in I'm putting it out there as something that I would like to see manifested, or are you saying intention as in here is the direction and the framework and what I would love to see happen, or both?
Bit of both, but specifically what I'm referring to is being conscious about what we do, why we do it, how we do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow. I'm so glad we've gone on this tangent, because I'm super intentional about being intentional, number one. Number two, I think there's value in allowing that subconscious part of you to imagine what life could be like, because we gravitate towards our most dominant thoughts. We gravitate towards the most dominant thoughts of ourselves, of the people closest to us, of the expectations that we've got of our team and our practice and our business and the community at large. We gravitate towards those things. That's how our mind and our body and our soul work together in unison. And I believe that the one thing that we never get back again is time. It's our finite resource. We never get that back. And if you don't make the decision about somebody else, about how you're going to use your time purposefully or that resource purposefully, then somebody else will. Now, you alluded at the introduction of this conversation that we had to reschedule for family reasons. And I'm family first. That is full stop. Nothing. If that's the way it is, that's the way it is. And so, again, that's an intentionality. Let's bring this back to something more practical.
Yep.
I'm running a practice. I've got two dentists, six staff, or I'm making this up, right? This
is your world. That's about right. Yeah, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of dentists, half a dozen staff. Do I have a clear sense of what I want from those people in my practice and what I want for those people in my practice? Have I written it down? Have I sat down with each of those people and said, look, this is what I'm seeing, sensing, thinking about. Can you give me some feedback on that? Because I'd love us to be on the same page and I'd really love your buy-in. I'd love to be able to create that together. This is just a relation. Intentionality isn't standing up and saying, everybody, this is what we're doing. This is what we're going. You're doing this. Go to that corner. You over here. Intentionality is actually being purposeful about the direction that you move in. Purposeful about who you are becoming. Humble about the fact that you will not be perfect in that process. Authentic about bouncing back from mistakes. Intentionality has all those things in it. And life itself, Jesse, will take us away from purpose and intentionality. Mm. Time, being called away for sick kids, somebody not being able to fulfill their responsibility, realizing you've made incorrect choice with a staff member, a fellow professional saying something that's hurtful behind your back. It's the sort of stuff that makes the world go round, because people are people.
Yeah, totally.
But we can be purposeful and intentional about who we are in that situation. So it doesn't mean everything's perfect, but it does mean we decide who we're becoming in that situation. We decide what we're going to be focusing on and giving out to other people in that situation. And that takes time, reflection, discipline, accountability, good conversations with peer groups. It takes extra help from the kind of work that you're doing with people in this space, because that external voice, those eyes and ears that can look over what's happening and going, hang on a minute, hang on, hold up, because if you keep going down there, you know, you can't see it yet, but the sign says no through road, and I'm going to help you with that.
Yeah, totally. I think in the work that we do, and I'm sure it's similar in the work that you do, it's often, I guess the metaphor or the saying I have is, you're not so fast, cowboy, in the sense that sometimes a lot of the work that we do is just highlighting some of the pitfalls ahead. And I really appreciate what you said there. I want to come back to the what we want from our team members and what we want for our team members, because I think that's a really interesting thought. And I'd like to just to come back to that. I think it's very powerful. I think, ladies and gents, if you're looking to scale your practice, to get some leverage, it's going to have to require the ability to build and lead a great team. And so if there's this opportunity to talk about what we want from and for our team, I'd like to explore that for a moment, Rowan. I totally understand the from part, but can you just tell me where people go wrong with their expectations from their team before we start talking about what they want for their team?
Yeah. Firstly, I believe in attribution with honor. That particular ideas come from a thought leader based in Atlanta called Andy Stanley. And he talks about this idea of the two-sided coin of what do you want for people, what do you want from them. And any leader that wants to get things done or has drive and vision and a conviction about how the world needs to be different and their place in it can be very clear about what they want from people.
Mm.
And so where that really works is, in one sense, it comes out of us naturally. My question would be to everyone listening to this conversation is, you might know what you want from your team, but do they?
Exactly.
Okay. But wait, there's more. Do they know what you want from them? And do you agree on the definitions or the meaning of what that is?
Yeah.
So for example, I do cultural and strategic alignment work with organizations. What do we want to be? We want to be excellent. Well, what does excellent mean? Well, and there's six people in the room, there are eight people in the room, the 12 people in the room. Every person's got a different definition of excellence. And then instead of it being something that inspires us, we actually use it against each other as an accountability tool.
Mm.
And, oh, that's not being excellent. Well, that's not what I think excellence is. And so I think the number one mistake we make developing people is they don't know what we want from them, and we don't agree on what it means.
So when we talk about what it means, I know you're not talking just about metrics and KPIs and all that sort of stuff, although that may be part of it. I just want to get clear about how to determine what it means, because I think this is a really interesting thing. And ladies and gents, please tune into this part that Rowan's about to share with us right now, because I've got a feeling this is going to be gold.
Yeah, it's and it's the right question too. In fact, metrics are second. Metrics are measurable after we decide on the definition. And this is the way that I explain it to people. Okay, this is what I want from you as a team, and you might as a person in this role, and you might write down four or five things. Now, the most important thing we've got to agree on is the definition of my expectations.
Yep.
And you and I need to work that out together. And so when we agree on the definition, Jesse, I'll take it another step further. The definition needs to be able to tell us immediately if we're doing it or not.
Mm.
So years and years ago, I was in a voluntary role and I was working with a bunch of young people, and we were responsible for every breakage and everything that went wrong and every light bulb that was out and every hole in the wall, mainly because it was true. And but I came in and I said, so we are going to be excellent, but our definition of excellence is we leave it better than how we found it.
Yep.
What I mean by that is I was able to walk in a room and I was able to speak to the person responsible, and I was simply able to ask them one question. And that question was, did you leave it better than how you found it? And that definition has got to be able to give me immediate feedback. It's got to be able to let me know whether I've reached the standard, exceeded the standard, and whether or not I'm comfortable to look you back in the eye and say, this is better than how I found it.
Mm.
And just that commitment completely changed our positioning in the organization. So if it's about customer-facing roles, if it's about specific bedside manner, particularly in dental practices, if it's about the experience that parents have while their children are being attended to, if it's the rebooking process, what's our definition that will tell us that we did it and we did it above expectation? Because as soon as that gets built into the conversation, you're not having accountability conversations anymore. You're simply looking at somebody saying, hey, was this done in such and such a way? And they will tell you yes or no.
Mm.
And it's not about catching them out. It's about, okay, let's focus on the definition that we've agreed on.
Yeah, totally.
My commitment as the practice manager, my commitment is to hold you accountable to that and support you as you get there.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting as well, because I like the shift. I like the shift. It's not a blame. It's not a, you've been bad, you didn't meet standard. It's a case of, right, let's agree on this. Let's get some buy-in from all of us about what that definition is. Let's get clear about how that manifests in a particular part of the practice. And then, of course, you know, as the practice manager or the leader of the business, it's about, let me support you as you move through that. And I really like that. So we've spoken a little bit about what we want from our team, but I'd like to explore what we want for our team.
Mm-hmm. This is where you're able to be articulate and clear and collaborative, frankly, about the expectations and about what's appropriate. I'll refer to the, it's quite famous, but less people know about it than I think. Horst Schultz is famous for the turnaround of the Ritz-Carlton enterprise in the 80s and 90s. And he tells a story where, as the chief executive of, in his role, he wasn't the head of the hotel, but he was the sort of the chief executive of his area.
Yeah.
He would go into a hotel and he would tell the customer-facing staff, so the bellhops, the room cleaners, the waiters, he said, you are not bellhops, cleaners, and waiters. You are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And we need to agree on what that looks like in the best interests of the person that's trusted us with their time and with their money and with the Ritz-Carlton experience. And then when we agree on what that is, I owe it to you to not lower the standard. That's the way he tells this story. And I sit there, I've listened to it over and over again, and every single time I'm reminded of how artful that is about setting expectations. Mm. So again, what I want from you is, which one are we talking about again? Just remind me what I want.
For you.
For you. Thank you. What, sorry, you might want to mark that. Would it be useful if you asked me that question again? Because I wonder if I just went off on a tangent.
Yeah, that's okay, mate. Too easy. So, Rowan, we've covered, you know, what we want from our team, but I just want to ask, so, Rowan, we've covered about what we want from our team, but what about what we want for our team? Can you just walk us through that, please, mate?
It's a really important piece of symmetry, Jesse. And so, when we talk about what we want from people, it's actually about being clear about the expectations and the standards and the definitions. When we talk about what we want for people, it's actually about something a little bit more difficult to measure. It's about engagement, connectedness, inclusiveness, contribution, because most humans that I interact with and work with actually want to contribute well beyond a paycheck and well beyond a job description. But again, I think changing the game of leadership is about us as leaders or people in the leadership roles having the skills to invite people in to something bigger than themselves. And when we talk about what do we want for you, again, it's a very similar process. What is it that motivates you? I always ask the question, you know, what would you do for free?
Yeah.
And in the corporate space, you, it's not that I'll get you to do it for free, but I'm interested to know what you would do for free. Yeah. What really does get you out of bed in the morning? What really does get you excited? What gets you angry? And so you have these kinds of conversations with people. You take them through the process of self-awareness and understanding themselves and seeing the part that they can play. And then you begin to talk about where they might fit in the future of the business, where they might fit in contributing to other areas of the practice. Mm. And again, the same danger. Do you invite them into taking responsibility and risk that they'll leave, or do you get them to stay at the lowest level possible and risk that they'll stay? You're way better off having a currency conversation. Do you need to be recognized? Do you need responsibility? Do you like to be challenged? Do you like to be encouraged? How do you like to be held accountable? And then what could you do in the business? What can you see that we can't? When I was running an organization, I would ask all our new people after 3 months to sit down and tell me what they saw that they thought was fantastic. And we always use the phrase world-class. Mm-hmm. Then tell me what problems do we have that I can no longer see? And I added a third one. What problems do we have that we no longer see that I'm not willing to face because I created them and I like them? And so, and we would get our people to do that at 3 months and at 12 months and give us feedback. So the what do we want for people is actually bigger than their job. It's their contribution to the future of the practice in which they become something that they may not have otherwise become if we didn't have that conversation.
Yeah. Wow.
You start that as a practice leader, as the leader of the organization, you start that by saying, hey, I see this skill in you. Is that something that you and I should talk about you doing more of?
Nice. Great question.
That's the way I'd start the conversation.
That's a great question. Ladies and gents, again, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to that last minute or so from Rowan, because I think there's some absolute pearls of wisdom, some real gold in there. I want to circle back to a couple of things, but before we do that, ladies and gents, I just want to highlight, you know, Rowan's website, rowandredge.com. There's a heap of really cool things in there that you're going to want to go and check out. There's a very rich blog, lots of great articles there. I was reading one today about the golden brick to do with the Lego show. Fantastic blog article amongst many others. I'd really encourage you to go back and have a look at that, because a lot of material on there that I think you'll find very helpful and instructive, and I can't recommend it enough. Ryan, I do want to circle back for a moment to the five voices. You did mention that earlier in our conversation, and you said there was the five types of voices. And I want to ask, is that essentially a model where we all have the five different voices, but we default to one or two styles more than the other? And how do we bring awareness to our voices of leadership? How do we consciously, with intention, to come back to that word, make sure we're using the right voice for the right situation?
It's a really, really insightful pickup there, and thank you. So the five voices is what I consider to be a smartened down version of the MBTI.
Yeah.
And everybody's got lots of opinions about assessments, but we still do hundreds and thousands of them a year.
Yeah.
All right. So we do them, and I think they're essential. Now, I will declare from the outset, I've been looking for, because I'm in the leadership development space and cultural alignment and communication, I've been looking for a tool that is human, authentic, inclusive, and really sticky. And so I've came across the five voices several months ago listening to a podcast. And it's, as I said earlier, it's been driven in the UK and in the USA at the moment. And I grabbed a couple of colleagues and we're wanting to expand it here in Asia Pac. The way that it works is that everybody has all five voices. So if you imagine you held up your hand with your five fingers, the thumb at the top and your little finger at the bottom, the five fingers, and the thumb was the loudest voice. So essentially you'd start with your first voice, second voice, third, fourth, fifth. Everybody has all five voices in an order and with a volume.
Mm.
And the quietest is at the bottom, and you are typically unconsciously incompetent of your bottom two voices.
Mm-hmm.
You are typically unconsciously competent of your top voice,
mm-hmm.
and a combination of the two, conscious and unconscious competence of the middle two,
mm-hmm.
particularly the third one. Generally, what happens is your third voice, you tend to overestimate your ability in it. And so, well, I have a link to the assessment. It doesn't take very long to do. And it gives you these five voices. So you end up with voices in order that all have a volume. And then they each have characteristics very quickly. The pioneer is the loudest voice. It's the drive. It's the will to win. It's the nothing stands in my way voice. Mm-hmm. The connector, of which I am, is the champion of relationships and networks. They always know someone who knows someone who can get things done.
Yeah.
Rapport is a real key. The guardian is the champion of process, due diligence, and structural alignment. So they're the person that says, is this bridge going to work? That's what the guardian does. And it's built into their name, guard.
Yep.
The creative is the fourth voice. And they are the combination of the creative thinker, the analytical, the creative feeler, the more artistic. They're a future-orientated voice. But they are actually about what's coming down the line, positively and negatively, but also deep alignment matters to the creative voice. And then the nurturer is a present-focused voice that is able to read people. And it's able to read people with a great sense of impact. Now, I am first voice connector, second voice pioneer. Both future-orientated voices, both the loudest voices, and both pretty intent on getting their own way. So most of my leadership life has been spent in investing energy trying to get my own way. I'd be guessing a lot of people who are in first or second place leadership positions have one or more of these loud voices. The challenge is, when we sit down and look at building a team and scaling up, and I wish I knew this 5 years ago. I wish I knew this 10 years ago. That's my world. When you're talking about scaling up, the voice order actually helps you invite people into the conversation and make a contribution according to their voice order and according to the specific characteristics of each of it. And so, well, I'm connector first voice. So I'm on the front foot with this, helping people understand. And in the several months we've been delivering it to market, not one person has said, this is no good. Not one.
Wow. That's really amazing. It sounds like a fascinating tool. And I guess, yeah.
Every single person that experiences it, and it changes not just your leadership, but the dynamic in your practice and in your environment, Jesse.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like a fantastic tool, mate. And I know that there'll be some people wanting to find out a bit more about that Five Voices tool. Is there some information on your website around that, mate?
The best way to do it would be to send an email to hello@rowandredge.com, hello@rowandredge.com, or hit me up on any socials. And we have a website, if you're in the show notes as well, we have a website where we're keeping this as part of a broader offering, and it's fourleadersglobal.com, fourleadersglobal.com.
Perfect.
But either way, we'd love to help. It's been a real game changer for us.
Cool. Mate, you've been incredibly generous with your time today. And firstly, I want to say thank you because there's so many things that you've shared with us today that are really practical, really useful and implementable. Yeah, there's lots of big ideas, but also snack size implementation, which I really like. You've got the big picture and the context, but there's some things to really take away and do that add real value. And thank you so much for sharing at both levels globally. And of course, you know, that implementation stage as well. I really want to tell you, there's so much I've got in my notes here that I've written down. I love the triangle. I love the concept of the five voices. I really love the conversation about from and for when it comes to team members. And I really like the conversation around intention and intentionality. So there's so many things here. And ladies and gents, if you're looking to scale up your practice, it goes without saying you're going to need to build and lead a team. And the things that Rowan has shared today are going to really hold you in good stead. I'd encourage you, as I've said earlier, to go and check out his website because there's just a treasure trove of absolute goodies and wonderful resources there that will help you on that path as well. Mate, I really thank you. I hope we can come back and do this again because I feel like we've just scratched the surface. I feel like, yeah, we haven't even scratched the scratch on the surface, actually.
Yeah, I'd love it. I just think having a conversation that can help people think and act differently about scaling up and think and act differently about the quality of their own leadership is a game changer. And I am always up for that conversation.
You're a good man. And listen, again, thank you so much from all of us here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast and all the audience. You're an absolute trooper and a real gentleman. And thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jesse.
Cheers, Ron.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.